This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from Jerry Lane Chevrolet and from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services, and Robin Dow is producing. If you'd like to chime in, 877-217-5757. With us to begin our show is Fred Dent, the longtime financial analyst, and he is no stranger to this program. Quite often we call on him when there's a crisis, and in the last several years it was short-lived. There was a bear market briefly in 2020, as we know. The Dow went down 33.9%, but it came back, and that was COVID-related. This is a different kind of thing with inflation, the highest it's been since the Reagan years, and no end in sight, and interest rates going up. In fact, today the Fed will make an announcement soon about how high it will go, maybe 0.75 point. The markets may not react positively. In the early going today, after several days of carnage, the Dow is up 382 points. Fred Dent is one who, he regularly says, don't panic, don't panic. Are you keeping that mantra, Fred Dent?
Yes, good morning. I've always thought that the best way to respond to a crisis is don't. These things always pass. This seems to be a garden variety bear market. They occur every 3 to 5 years. There have been a bunch of these since World War II, I think 13. This is my fifth. And what people forget is, and it doesn't, by the way, I don't mean to sound glib when I say this, it doesn't feel good to see the value of a portfolio decline 20%, 15%, 30%. But this is a feature, not a bug. The tree must be shaken every now and then to let the dead leaves fall so that there could be new growth.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Fred Dent of Dent Wealth Advisors. Now, a listener points out accurately that in a bear market, some parts of the market react differently than others. And one of the ones that's really taken it on the chin is this cryptocurrency. How do you view that right now?
Well, yeah, it's been carnage. It reminds me of the technology stock or the internet stock bubble bursting in the year 2000. Bitcoin is down 65-70%. Ethereum, the other big one, is down 75%. Even some of those so-called stable coins, the ones that were supposed to stay at a dollar in value and never change, some of those have even gone bust. So there is carnage out there. But Jim, not just in crypto. If you were speculating on technology stocks during COVID and had a big run-up, you're going to be down big time. There's this ARK Innovation Fund, which was heavily invested in some of the cutting-edge technology firms, that is down 61% from its high. So if you're just a garden variety investor, a 20% decline isn't so bad if you've been investing. But if you've been speculating on things like cryptos and technologies, then you're going to be hurt more than others.
Fred Dent is with us for the first segment of Dent Wealth Advisors, and the Fed sometime soon will make an announcement. I don't think there's any doubt there will be a rate hike, and we've already had a big one preceding this one, and we may have more to come, but it was thought it was going to be a half point. Some are saying now 0.75 point. What are your people telling you, Fred?
I think the consensus right now is 0.75 point. If it's anything different from that, that will be a surprise, but I'm not as pessimistic on inflation because we're already starting to see some softening in pricing. For example, retail spending was just announced this morning. It dropped last month, or actually a month or two ago in May. And Target, Walmart, Macy's, some of the big retailers have already announced that they're going to be dropping some of their prices on the stuff they sell. Those are things like furniture, consumer electronics, because their inventories have built up so much and supply chains are starting to ease. They've got more inventory than they know what to do with, so they're going to have to be running discounts. You can expect that to start around July 4th. Where the price increases are moving are around services like travel and vacations and things like that, where people are moving from buying stuff to getting out and about and doing the things that they couldn't do during COVID.
You noted that there have been 12 bear markets since World War II. The last started on February 19th of 2000 and ended on March 23rd of 2020. That's 2020, not 2000. But the Dow in that 5-week period lost 34% of its value, but by August 18th of 2020, it was higher than it had been. It was only 148 days for a new high to take place after the precipitous decline. That would seem to be unusual, that it would seem the market may take a little longer or maybe a lot longer to get back to where it was, Fred.
Yeah, well, that was one of the shortest bull markets in history. It was really more of an aberration because of the COVID outbreak. On average, a bear market will last about a year to 18 months. And I can expect that it might last another year. We're only down 20%. The average bear market is about 30% from the high. So we may have another 10% to go. But one of the good things that's also happening right now is that when you look at investor sentiment, the way that people are feeling about their investments, the way they're thinking about the economy, there's such extreme negativity out there and pessimism that helps the market begin to recover. It's only if you think of the inverse, when markets are doing very, very well and everybody's optimistic, that's usually the time to begin to trim the sails a little bit.
Have you been moving things to the sideline, or are you sticking it out?
We ride it out. The best definition of a bear market that I've ever heard is from Nick Murray. It says that a bear market is a period of time during which people who believe that this time is different sell their stocks at panic prices to people who understand that this time is never different. And now we have been doing a couple of things that are every prudent investor should do during a market like this. There's something called tax loss harvesting. That simply means taking stocks or investments that are down in a taxable account, selling them, and then the same day moving to a similar investment so that you don't miss the upside. But what you do is generate a tax loss that you can carry forward against future gains. And that's a very effective strategy in a period like this. It really takes a lot of discipline to do that because it's easy to be afraid, not take any action, and be paralyzed. But tax loss harvesting is one of those easy things to do in terms of the making sense, but hard to pull off emotionally sometimes.
So you're saying you can get tax benefits without selling?
You will have to sell, but you can move to a very similar investment to generate the loss. So again, all you're doing is like descending on an elevator. You're getting off one elevator and walking to the next elevator over, so you're not giving up any of your upside when it returns.
Well, conceivably, listeners already bitten on this. Conceivably, you could sell a stock and then rebuy it immediately. Then, couldn't you?
No, you can't buy the same stock within 30 days because that is what creates something under what is called the wash sale rule. So you have to wait 30 days. But if you buy, let's say, an index fund in the S&P 500. You could buy a similar fund that is not exactly the S&P 500, but maybe in another sector of the market that would also rise when the market goes back up.
Mm-hmm. Now, you noted that you're sticking it out, as you did in 2020. And for those who did stick it out in 2020, it turned out really well. And those who tried to time it, many of them lost their shirts. Because it was just what we were talking about. It rebounded so quickly, there wasn't enough time to really get in and regain the losses. So this is a tricky maneuver, and you, unlike our friend Andy Anderson, believe that it's with great peril to try to time the market.
Yeah, the economy, we believe, cannot be consistently forecast. The stock market cannot be consistently timed. Therefore, really, Jim, the only way of capturing and compounding the permanent return of stocks is to ride out their sometimes significant but temporary declines. There's never been a bear market that stayed a bear market. They always recover, at least in the history of the stock market.
A listener asks about oil stocks. Price per barrel is way up. Profits for the oil giants way up. Is this a good time to invest in Exxon, Mobil, and companies like that?
Well, the best time to have invested in Exxon and commodity stocks, which have also done very well, was before this happened. Those are both up.
Was about 6 months
Exxon's
ago?
Up 50.
Yeah,
6 months ago. Commodities are up 47% year to date. Energy stocks, that's the only bright spot of the market right now. Those are also up big time.
Well, Well, some of these glamour stocks, as Andy, I think, has called them on occasion, Apple, Amazon, they've taken it on the chin. Is this a good opportunity to get in for the stocks that are the most valuable ones as far as market capital on the planet?
Could be. I mean, Apple is a fine company. They're here to stay. The problem with Apple is that in order for them to generate additional net earnings, they really have to increase revenues substantially. And that's very hard to do in short of coming out with something new and groundbreaking. And over the last couple of years, their only releases have just been incremental gains on their existing products.
Well, Fred Dent of Dent Wealth Advisors, not Death, Dent Wealth Advisors, thank you for your erudition as always, and we'll be calling again soon, Fred. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. In studio is one of the exceptional athletes that has been produced by this city over the last half century, Daryl Glasper, who, of course, we know became a Metro councilman and a business person and a leader in the Republican Party, although when he was serving on the Metro Council, he was a Democrat. And he's here today to talk primarily about two topics that are passions of his, golf and guns. Golf and guns. And golf, understand, at the age of 69, Daryl Glasper, you won a big tournament over the weekend, didn't you?
Well, I finished second.
Did you?
I finished second, yes.
What was the tournament?
It was the Capital City Golf Association tournament. It's about 120 African-American men from different states, and we get together every other 2 weeks. I finished second in Monroe last week, and I finished second this week.
In Baton Rouge?
In Baton Rouge.
Where'd you play?
At Santa Maria.
And what was your score?
78-73.
78 and a 73. There's some pro players who don't do that well.
No, they look. Listen,
if they have a bad day, that's a bad day for Phil Mickelson. But nonetheless, you're within about five strokes of being able to play on the tour. So, what's your handicap?
My handicap's a five.
Okay, there you go. There you go.
A legitimate five.
All right. Well, the reason I wanted to talk to him about golf, obviously, the man has a passion for golf. If he can score like that at the age of 69, this Saudi Arabian tour is causing a lot of gnashing of teeth with the PGA. Phil Mickelson looks like a defection. You fault these guys for this?
No, they're independent contractors. Jim, let me tell you this. The real elephant in the room is the money. The PGA is fighting because they know that they're going to lose sponsorship, they're going to lose ratings, they're going to lose money because some of the best players in the world decided to go take care of their families. These guys are independent contractors. They pay their own bills. They pay their own caddies. They don't make the cut. They don't get paid. And then the PGA has compiled a tremendous amount of money over the years on the likeness and images of these guys and the shots that they've taken. And they got enough of it. Now, come along the Saudi tour and saying, look, fellas, you know, we want to come in and do things a little different. We're going to have 10 tournaments. That's 3 days instead of four. You don't have to play a pro-am. And we're going to pay you $200 million so that once you're through with golf, you can go and live a decent life. Now, how in the hell are you going to fault someone who's an independent contractor to go do that for themselves and for their families?
All right. Well, Sally Jenkins, one of my favorite sports writers, Washington Post, daughter of Dan Jenkins, says, you may have been tempted to shout at Mickelson and his fellow elopers to the Saudi tour. Just say you want to be filthy rich. It's so much more defensible than the tripe that you're trotting out. But you understand Mickelson's motives. He's not out there to grasp at nine-figure checks. He's there to be an ambassador for the greater good of the game and his fellow men. Dustin Johnson, too. If you have a problem with kicking bunker sand over the bloodstains left by the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, then you simply don't understand what a profoundly beneficent influence Saudi golf can have around the globe. Now, she's being somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but does she have a point that the Saudis are bad actors and we shouldn't be playing around with them?
The Saudis are bad actors. China's a bad actor. North Korea's a bad actor. They're bad actors all over the world. They got bad actors in the United States of America. Now, I'll give you one example. People are not going to like this. The PGA Tour has been around 100 years. How many African-American men is on that PGA Tour? One. And it's not Tiger Woods because he said he's not African American. He didn't want to defend his mother. See, so that's what I'm saying. Don't talk about the human rights of other countries when you you buying China goods, you wearing everything you wear on the golf tour from China, mm-hmm. okay? And so it wasn't about that. It's the group that want to say, I want to protect my money and my finances. That's what it all boils down to.
All right. 877-217-5757. And I know Daryl has had some business dealings in the Middle East. Did you ever meet the Saudi prince?
I have not met the Saudi prince. Would love to, but have not.
You'd like to meet this dude.
Well, yeah, like, listen to me. The president of the United States was over there last week begging
for
all.
I know he was.
So if the president of the United States would meet him, why can't I?
Well, he might dismember you if he didn't like you.
Oh, that's okay. I don't worry about it. Then nobody have to worry about talking to me again.
All right. 877-217-5757. And Daryl, in light of yesterday's show in which Melissa Flournoy came on and she's asking Lipsy's Firearms to quit selling assault weapons and noted that the weapon, the young man in Uvalde, Texas, the troubled guy, crazed individual who shot 19 people, kids, killed them, two teachers, killed them, shot their faces off. He did so with an assault weapon that was provided on the wholesale market from Lipsy's Firearms. Now, Richard Lipsy's a good friend of yours, isn't he?
Richard Lipsy's a good friend of mine. I think he's an honorable guy. He's a community activist. He's donated to the community. I've been knowing the man for over 30 years. Now, if you want to ask Mr. Lipsy to stop selling guns, tell Ford to stop selling cars. Now, let me tell you why. See that gun I just placed
there?
Yeah,
well, Daryl, by the way, usually we don't have guests do this, and I trust him enough that he just put a firearm on the console here. But what are you trying to show me?
I'm trying to say that this gun hadn't moved since I put it there. Okay? So we are not bad people. That's my gun. If I choose to go do some nefarious thing with a gun, how in the heck the gun manufacturer who manufactured that gun probably didn't sell it to me, how I'm going to fault them for that gun and it never moved? See, I want to say this, Jim.
Well, I must say I'm looking at it. It does appear the gun is unloaded.
Oh, it's unloaded. I wouldn't bring a loaded gun in here. Now, I'm not crazy, okay? All right. I just wanted to prove a point. The point is, bad people are everywhere. Now, when you talk about the gun manufacturers, I want to say this to you. And this is, I have a passion for this. For the last 30 years, African Americans been killing each other at an alarming rate. I haven't heard one gun active group or anybody else say, get these firearms off the street so that black men and women are not killed. Our children are being killed in our communities. But they're talking about assault weapons.
Which were banned, by the way, for 10 years.
Well, it was banned for 10 years, but did the government open it up where they can sell them?
Well, your President George Bush did.
Well, then let me say, it's the law. Everybody
but we can always
the
change the law. Though.
If they want to change the law, good. Listen to me, Jim. I believe in.
And there's an ethical thing here. Now, Lipsy's makes a lot of money selling these weapons to the government, too. And the government obviously needs these weapons. I don't think anyone would deny that. They make a lot of money by selling other firearms, which like the one you have, and I have one at home, that are not assault weapons. What's the big deal about selling assault weapons, which are weapons of war, Daryl Glass?
Look, I want to say this to you, and this has always been my theory. My grandmother told me a long time ago, said, all I want you to do is have equal footing. I want an equal shot. So I have assault weapons. I don't mind telling you. I have a lot of weapons. I like guns. I like guns. And by the way, bullets are hard to get right now. But, you know, so I'm going to tell you this. Assault weapons, Jim. If a guy's going to shoot at me 16 times, I'm going to shoot at him 3, do you think that's a fair fight? So if the government opened it up to where you can buy an assault weapon, damn it, I want one too. Okay? But I can't fault the gun manufacturer. I'm going to tell you again. The guys that took airplanes and flew them into the Twin Towers, a horrific incident for this country.
They were Saudis, by the way.
That's right. But do they ban airplanes? Guys get drunk and they kill people's families on vacation.
Airplanes are not meant to kill people.
Well, hold on a second. They're not meant, but they used them.
Well, because people used weapons to get on the plane and take it over and put them down. Hold on just a second.
What I'm saying to you is this.
You can kill somebody efficiently without using an assault weapon. And when you have a nut it can take out a lot more people with an assault weapon in a short period of time.
I'm going to tell you how you address it. Now, this is my theory, because, you know, sometimes my thought process is not like yours. Okay, they have a rules and regulations to purchase a gun. I know every time I go purchase a gun, I have a waiting period. They call state police or whatever state I'm in Texas, wherever, they call and say, look, is this guy eligible to buy a gun? Okay, now, if you want to go a step further, I don't know if I qualify, but everybody have a private physician. If you want to add another step to it, talk to your politicians. They're the ones running the country. They're the ones make the rules and regulations. Tell them, say, okay, good. Let's get it. What is the evaluation mindset of this individual if you have a primary doctor? Okay, state police, do your thorough background check. Then maybe you may come up and say, hey, Darryl Glassford does not qualify to have an assault weapon or even a gun.
Darryl Glassford, longtime Republican activist and gun enthusiast, is back after this pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. On yesterday's program, we visited with Melissa Flournoy, who's head of Louisiana Progress, and her group, which includes a group called 10,000 Women. They're calling on Lori Lipsey, the president and CEO of Lipsey's Firearms, the daughter of Richard Lipsey, the founder, to cease selling assault weapons. And there are many people who've signed on to this letter, prominent people in the community, people who certainly admire the Lipseys for their philanthropic endeavors, and there are people who can tell the tale of how Richard Lipsey has made our community a better place. But he is the biggest wholesaler of guns in the world, and it was a gun, according to Melissa Flournoy, that was sent to Oasis Firearms in Uvalde, Texas, from Lipsey's, that was used in the shooting at the Robb Elementary School. Darryl Glassford, Richard's good friend, is with us, firearms enthusiast himself, who says that guns are not the problem, people are the problem. I'm paraphrasing it, but I think that's the message he's conveying, and of course that's something we've heard a time or two. Let's go briefly to the phones. We have a few people in line. If you can make your remarks concise, I would appreciate it. Tim in Thibodeau. Tim, good morning.
Thank you very much, Jim, Darryl. Darryl, I'd be interested in your comments upon the NRA versus the GOA, the Gun Owners of America.
All right. They do have these rival gun groups, and the NRA is the one that is best known. But as I stated before, if the NRA suddenly went away, there would be others to take their place. Do you know anything about these rival factions?
I don't know anything about the rival factions. All I know is that the First Amendment said you have a right to bear arms, and I like that. I like that amendment.
Okay. Today in the New York Times, a guy named Todd Tanner, who's a gun enthusiast from Big Fork, Montana, he says, don't add limits on firearms, hold gun makers liable. He wants lawsuits galore, saying that that's the way to address this. Do you think that handling it in the courts would be a good thing?
No, let me tell you, Jim, you know, I'm going to say this to you. This is my editorial opinion. All these people calling for this gun, for legislation dealing with gun rights and lawsuits. I mean, look, let me just tell you this. At the end of the day, that gun that I just put on this table has never moved. No one's touched it. It is not going anywhere. It's not going to do anything. The man who manufactured that gun has a right in this country to make money. See, that's what it's all about. Now,
is it blood money, Darryl?
How is blood money?
Because those things are used to kill people.
Listen to me. What about automobiles?
They're not used to kill people. They're used to get us place to place.
They kill them all the time, Jim.
Of course they do, now, but look, it's an accident.
It's an accident. Well, that's an accident. You know why it's an accident? Because it's put in the wrong hands of a wrong person.
Okay. James in Metairie. James, you're on with Darryl Glassford. Hi, James.
Hey, thanks, Jim. To your guest, Jim, you know, sir, the equivalency argument about cars and airplanes, it's ridiculous. When they teach people how to fly an airplane, do they teach them how to fly that aircraft into a building? When they take driver education, do they teach them to drive cars into human beings? But at the gun range, which I'm sure you've been to multiple times, there's a target. And what does that target look like? It's the silhouette of a human being. A successful shot is to hit that human being silhouette in center body mass. That is the goal, to kill. Cars are not designed to kill, and neither are aircraft. It's ridiculous. That may stop be, using it.
It may be ridiculous to you, but I'm saying to you, what you just said is the exact thing that happens when you go to a gun range. You know why? Because you have a right to defend yourself, sir. I hope you have a gun, because you got to remember, I'm African-American, okay? And if I go in the community and someone has a gun and that silhouette you're talking about, I'm going to knock the hell out of it.
Nancy on Highland Road. Nancy, good morning. You're on with Daryl Glasper. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning, Jim. Mr. Glasper is making a few mistakes. I think he said First Amendment. It's the Second Amendment. There are three blacks on the PGA Tour. Harold Varner is doing very well. The third is doing very well. There's also a man named Champ. I mean, he needs to get his facts straight.
All right. Well, that's still not many on the PGA Tour, but...
Let me clarify this. Cameron Champ does not identify as African American. I got my facts right. Okay,
right,
I mean, on the Second Amendment, but this is my First Amendment. I have a right to do it. But I want to say this to you, Jim. African Americans, I want them, all the ones who come in and raising this hell, African Americans have been killed by these things here for over 30 years at an alarming rate, and not one person, not one time, or one group have said, hey, we need to make sure that these individuals don't exterminate themselves with these guns.
We've heard that.
Okay, you've heard it, but I'm just saying, what groups are saying it? They don't talk about suing the gun manufacturer.
Well, I'll
then.
Give you this. When a bunch of school kids are shot, people do heighten their attention to this. That is true.
Well,
I'll give you that. But Hiller Moore, I talked to him last night. He said in Baton Rouge this year that assault weapons are responsible for 52 murders. This year.
Okay. Okay, well, listen to me. Hold on a second. That's what your legislature's for. That's what your United States senators, your congressmen. Don't go to the gun manufacturers. Go to them. They're the ones who set the policy.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on with Daryl Glasper. Good morning, sir.
Hi. Good morning. I really enjoy this guest. I hope you have him on more often. I totally agree with him on the assault weapons. I mean, you know, when we have these riots and businesses are attacked, and it's your business getting attacked, the only thing that's going to stop these rioters from tearing your business apart is an assault rifle. And we've seen this time and time again. Also, in countries where people are not allowed to own weapons, like, look, communist Cuba, for example, they just arrested 300 protesters. Why? Because the people don't have guns, and so the tyrant can take over and oppress the people.
All right, communist countries are a bit different, and it's a numbers game. If you're one lonely guy with a gun, you're not going to be able to take over a whole country. And Daryl Glasper, we don't have mass killings in other countries like we do in the U.S. Why do we have them in the U.S.?
Because
we have availability to assault weapons.
Because you have availability. We're one of the freest countries in the world. Jim, I want to say this to you. Lay the blame where the blame. Look, everybody want to pile up, just not because I've been knowing Richard Lipsy for 30 years. He's not the only gun manufacturer. He may be the largest, but he's not the only one. Listen to me. I have a passion for this. Listen to me. I have a passion for this. And the passion is, don't try to divert from the real facts. And the facts are, that gun never moved. It is the person that's handling the gun. I don't care what kind of gun. It could be a damn tank.
All right. Well, if you take that gun, and if it were loaded, and you started shooting, you're not going to kill 21 people in a few minutes.
Well,
But you can with an assault weapon.
Well, with an assault weapon, talk to your politicians. That's where you get your answers.
All right. David in Atlanta, please be brief. Hi, David.
Yeah. Mr. Glasper, if that gun on the table were, say, a nuclear-tipped bazooka, and it hasn't hurt anyone since you have been there, therefore, using your own simple-minded logic, shouldn't nuclear-tipped bazookas be legalized?
He must be thinking this is goddamn United States Army. Listen to me, man. We talking about assault rifles, you know. And look here, David. I've been every time I come on here, you call me with some crazy stuff. Take your medicine. That's all I'm gonna tell you. Go ahead. I don't want to answer that.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Patricia, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Okay, so if I have a bottle of sulfuric acid sitting on the counter and somebody knocks it over and gets burned by it, they can sue the sulfuric acid manufacturer. Even though sulfuric acid you know, just sitting on the counter. And everyone knows that if you get sulfuric acid on yourself, if you're not handling the bottle correctly, you will get burned.
All right. And hopefully we'll get this gentleman, Mr. Tanner, on the show, who says we need more lawsuits to solve this, that would be a great impediment. It is an interesting concept. Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, you're on with Mr. Glasper. Hi, Trish.
Good morning. I'm calling this new legislation that would have red flag laws where someone would determine who and who not is not capable of having a gun. Doesn't that make anybody worried? I mean, who determines who is a danger to themselves or to society? Who decides that?
All right. There would have to be a judgment call. But if somebody's posting things on the internet, really they ought to be apprehended. But nonetheless, I wouldn't want them to have a gun.
Right. Darryl? Let me say this to you. I think there's some ways to attack all problems that you don't blow out of proportion. There are individuals in this country. Now, and I'm going to tell you, see, Jim, and I know you're with the media. But the media will go up and they will sensationalize these killings by playing it over and over and over again. Now listen to me good. And then when something happened, they said, oh, the gun manufacturer is the blame. Hey, you have to report the news, but you don't have to cover it the way they're covering it. That's my opinion. That's my editorial opinion. But I also say this, and I mean this, I don't care who likes it, who dislikes it. There's have not been enough emphasis on black crime with weapons in this country, and we need to address it.
All right, well, amen to that. But that would mean getting rid of assault weapons, and you don't want that either.
Talk to the politicians.
Dominic in Grand Coteau. Dominic, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Interesting conversation. I agree with your guest about the golfers with LIV and, you know, wearing the Chinese clothes. And we talk to all our adversaries one way or another or deal with them. But my question is regarding the businesses, protecting their businesses and stuff. And a caller thing said about, you know, businesses have insurance. And so that's not an excuse to be having an automatic weapon.
All right. Well, what about gun owners having to have insurance? What about that, Darryl? We have to have insurance to drive a car.
I have insurance.
Do you have liability insurance?
To protect my property.
Well, to protect.
If you own my property.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, this is one that obviously has legs, and we appreciate your patience, and we'll be back. Switch topics after this on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. A reminder that today, at 2 o'clock, it'll be Ask the Governor with Governor John Bel Edwards. A few minutes now with Ebony Thomas Phillips, the director of Louisiana's Elderly Protective Service Program under the Governor's Office of Elderly Affairs. And today is Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and there are events in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Lafayette, Alexandria, DeRidder, Lake Charles, all over the state. And good morning to you, Ebony Thomas Phillips.
Good morning.
Well, tell us what's going on today, throughout the day. I know in most of these venues, things have already started, but you're trying to help people of a certain vintage be aware of services that are available, aren't you?
Yes, we are. So today, as you stated, is Elder Abuse Awareness Day. And here in the state of Louisiana, we have investigators all over the state who are ready and prepared to investigate allegations of abuse and neglect that occur. We have informational booths set up across the state today, and we're just there to give information about abuse and neglect, the types of abuse that we investigate, some signs and symptoms that everyone should look for, be aware of, and any other questions that anyone may have. Those questions can certainly be answered.
We're visiting with Ebony Phillips, who is the person who is in charge of this important endeavor, Ebony Thomas Phillips. And in Louisiana, we have a population that on a proportional basis is older than most of the rest of the country, and not terribly significant. But nonetheless, a lot of these people of a certain age, they require services, and they are victims at times because of their inability to care for themselves. Is this a significant issue in our state right now?
Right now, over the last fiscal year, our office investigated about 5,000 cases of elder abuse. And according to statistics and national guidelines, we're not sure that we're receiving all of the cases of elder abuse. We certainly don't think so. And so it is important that we're aware of it. We want to educate the community, educate the clients or the elder population on how to prevent abuse from occurring. And just, again, if anyone suspects that abuse or neglect is occurring to anyone over the age of 60, we ask that you certainly report it so that we can go into the home and investigate the allegation and stop the abuse from occurring.
Well, in Baton Rouge, the information available today for this day that is Elder Abuse Awareness Day at the Galvez Lobby downtown, 9-4-602 North 5th Street, Baton Rouge, Lafayette State Office Building, 9:30 to 3, and in New Orleans at the Gretna Council on Aging, 8:30 to 11, 476 Franklin Street. But it's important business, and we thank you for sharing, and hopefully you'll get a good turnout. And we obviously need to take care of those who are seasoned citizens. Thank you, Ebony.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
Pleasure. We're joined now by Howard Bloom, the author of the New York Times bestseller and Edgar Award winner American Lightning. He's had several other fine pieces. He's won a Pulitzer Prize, twice nominated for investigative reporting. He worked at the New York Times, editor with Vanity Fair, and he is back in a huge way with The Spy Who Knew Too Much, an ex-CIA officer's quest through a legacy of betrayal. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's nice to touch base with you, and this starts on a sunlit morning, 1978, September, Chesapeake Bay. What's going on?
Well, on that morning, a sailboat goes aground. The Coast Guard goes to investigate. They find bullets scattered on the deck. They go down below to the galley. They see troves of documents that are stamped top secret, classified. There's a special device, electronic device, called a burst transmitter. And this is used for communicating with satellites. But there's no sign of the boat's owner, John Paisley, a high-ranking CIA official. 10 days later, a body, despite having been wrapped in 38 pounds of chains, surfaces to the Chesapeake Bay. The body is unrecognizable. However, the CIA says, well, this is John Paisley, and he's committed suicide. But nothing seems to make sense, and the hero of my book, a real-life CIA agent by the name of Pete Bagley, he's retired now at this point, decides to investigate. He believes that Paisley's strange death, if it is a death, will provide the answers to everything that has gone wrong within the CIA in the past decade.
Bagley, who is pictured in the book, a face right out of Central Casting, strong-jawed, he fights all odds. How daunting was his mission?
Well, it's very daunting because he's fighting two different enemies. First, he's trying to penetrate a Soviet deception operation, and at the same time he's trying to deal with the naysayers inside his own intelligence service who are saying that he's paranoid, that the Soviets are not trying to penetrate us, and this is just sheer paranoia. Bagley talks about the Soviets have a master plot, that they're sending defectors over here to spread disinformation and to work with spies, double agents, or moles who are already embedded. His detractors inside the agency call this the monster plot. And this sort of antagonism, this bitterness, exists to this very day. You know, here we're fighting really a de facto war against the Soviets in the Ukraine, and yet our spy agency, there's a continuum of treason which is putting us at a disadvantage and perhaps costing Ukrainians lives.
The book from Howard Bloom, The Spy Who Knew Too Much, and the U.S. has been at war one way or another with the Soviet Union and Russia for a long time, I guess since World War II, maybe before, but we did unite for one brief shining moment. But you say that Paisley's disappearance, that Pete Bagley unearthed. The search for the truth was helped by some Russian spy masters, one in particular. Who was he?
Yes. You know, after there was a brief period when the Cold War seemed to have been over, it was very brief. The Berlin Wall falls down. There's a glasnost, and there's a former KGB general, Sergei Krandashev, and he vaguely sort of recruits him. He's a spy, and he recruits this Russian spy master to get to the bottom of things. And he learns about Department 13. That's a Soviet division of the KGB that sent over false defectors to spread disinformation. And he's able to find out the role that that Paisley played in this operation. Paisley's death is filled with all sorts of things that don't make sense. For example, when this body comes up that the CIA says is Paisley, the first thing you'd want to do is look at his fingerprints. You know, every CIA's officer's fingerprints should be on file. Well, Paisley's, the CIA says, has somehow disappeared. I mean, I used to try that in high school, say that, you know, the dog ate my homework kind of thing. It's just not around. And then here's how they explain how the suicide must have taken place. They say Paisley was on the boat. He wrapped himself up in 38 pounds of chains, which are pretty heavy. He trundles then over to the side of the boat, manages to jump off, and while in midair, he takes the revolver. He's right-handed, reaches across his body, and shoots himself behind his left ear, which makes, it's such an acrobatic event. The only thing more acrobatic or more nimble is the CIA's explanation of how this could have happened. It's nonsensical. And Begley begins to ask, why are they covering this up? And that leads him on his quest.
Well, Paisley, John Paisley, was a high-flying CIA officer, and he was known in that circle well. He once received a medal from the CIA director, William Colby. How important was he to U.S. Endeavors abroad?
Well, Paisley was significantly important because he monitored our knowledge of Russians' nuclear developments, how we tried to track their missile compounds, their nuclear developments on different weapon systems. And if you were the enemy, this is exactly what you'd want to know. You would want to keep this. This would be the U.S.'s greatest secrets, what we know about our enemy. He now knew what cards we were holding in effect in this game of poker. And he allows several operations to be blown. And this is what gets Paisley going. We're running agents in great danger behind enemy lines. And suddenly they're caught by the Soviets and they're executed or go on trial and then executed. And no one can understand why this is happening. And the only reason that makes sense is that there's a double agent working inside our agency. And what makes this so dangerous, as I say, is there's a continuum of treason. It's not just a story about the past, but Paisley has been arguably replaced by the next traitor who's embedded already in the agency.
Well, it's a rollicking, riveting ride, The Spy Who Knew Too Much, from Howard Bloom. Quickly, and we only have a few seconds, but the decomposed corpse that was recovered from Chesapeake Bay, are we sure it was Paisley?
I'm fairly sure, and so is my hero, that it's not. The CIA says it is, but it just doesn't make sense. Paisley was 5'7", weighed 140 pounds. This corpse suddenly is 5'11", and 168 pounds. It just doesn't make sense. His physiognomy changed completely.
Thank you, Howard Bloom. Signature support for Talk Louisiana from First Financial Tax and Accounting and Jerry Lane Chevrolet.